We got there just before noon. When I pulled up in front of the cabin, Jason hardly lifted his head from his phone. The Airbnb sat completely by itself in a thick stand of pine and fog. It was the perfect type of place to book for solace. I turned off the engine and the silence ate us alive. You know there's no Wi-Fi, right? He said.
That's the point.
He rolled his eyes, got out, and lit a cigarette that he claimed he quit months ago. I watched the smoke curl toward the gray skies. All I needed was a day. Just one day to feel he still loved me deep down somewhere. Once we got in, I started unpacking. Jason scrolled on his phone and sulked. Weeks had gone by without him touching me. I stopped asking why. At 1 o'clock, we were sitting across the dining table from one another in silence. The air between us crackled with all the old tensions that hadn't been resolved. It felt like we had a dense, invisible forest of unspoken feelings between us. He finished his third glass of wine and looked at me. You've been quiet, he said.
Just thinking.
I replied. He smirked. Wow, new hobby, huh? He taunted, like he was the smartest in the whole wide world.
Why can't you just be nice for a date, Jason? Is it too much to ask?
I can't be all lovey-dovey in this crappy Airbnb. He pushed the table while standing. The glass on it fell to the floor, breaking. The fight started the way they always did. I should have left when I had the option, he said angrily, and threw his glass into the sink, shattering into pieces just like our marriage.
Why didn't you?
I asked calmly. He gave me a blank look. Because I wanted you to break first. Jason stormed out. He said that he needed some air. He left without a jacket and no flashlight. He just walked away into the tree line like the coward he was. I didn't follow him. I cleaned up the glass that he smashed against the sink. I sat down, I finished Jason's drink, and I waited. It didn't take long to discover what I already knew. Jason's phone was tucked away behind the firewood stack, screen still locked. He had never changed his passwords. Jason had always thought of himself as smarter than everyone else. That was his downfall, his flaw, that and underestimating me. The messages were all there, unmistakable, ugly little truths packed in emojis and promises made late at night. Texts to a woman he only saved as L. These messages weren't one-time flings. They weren't a regret. They were the ongoing, regular, and intimate reality of his life. And then there was the one that burned the hottest. I'm done. She's pathetic. I'll tell her after the weekend. He was ready to leave me. For her. All I had given, after all I had done, he was just going to throw me away like I was some old, worn-out doll. No, that was not going to happen to me. He thought I was still soft, still love-worn and broken. He didn't know I had already let go of love and replaced it with tactics. I went to the fireplace and picked up the heavy antique metal vase the Airbnb owners used as decoration, held it in my lap, feeling the weight of it. Imagining it connecting with his skull, not to kill, just to remind. And then I waited. When Jason returned, he stepped into the doorway, dripping with sweat and smirking like he still had a chance to talk his way out of it.
Lena, I...
I stood, took one step forward, and swung. The metal vase struck him just above the temple, a clean, brutal hit. His eyes widened for a heartbeat, then glassed over as his body collapsed to the floor like a marionette with its strings cut. I knelt beside him and checked his pulse. Weak, but there, that was enough. Dragging him across the hardwood floor took more effort than I expected. He was dead weight, literally and metaphorically. I heaved, pushed, and pulled, out the back door, down the path, and through the trees. The waterfall thundered behind the cabin. That 500-foot drop had been the real reason I chose this Airbnb. Not the view, not the quiet, the fall, the kind of place that made bodies vanish. I dragged Jason right to the edge, where the moss turned slick and the spray hit my face. He groaned, dazed, starting to stir. Perfect timing. I leaned down, brushed his damp hair from his forehead, and whispered into his ear.
This is what you get for betraying me. Goodbye, darling.
Then I pushed. There was no scream, just a wet, brutal silence as his body disappeared into the roaring white below. When it hit, I didn't flinch. The current would carry him for miles. The rocks would strip his face of features. The cold would keep him preserved, unreachable. They'd never find him. I walked back to the cabin, peeled off my soaked clothes, and began the rest of my work. I sliced a neat line across my palm, bruised my shoulder on the corner of the counter, smashed the mirror, and scattered blood across the tile. Then I picked up the phone. Only one call needed to be made. I didn't care that there was barely any service. No Wi-Fi. This place had always been perfect for what I needed.
My husband...
My voice shook, just enough.
He snapped. He said he couldn't take it anymore. He hit me. He ran into the woods. I think he's going to hurt himself.
They believed me. Of course they did. They sent officers and paramedics. A blanket was draped around my shoulders while I cried into it on cue. I told them about the cheating, the threats, the bruises I'd hidden for months. They promised they'd search for them. They're still searching. Anna had found this cheap Airbnb, secluded cabin, forest views, all that rustic charm bullshit for what was supposed to be a fun weekend. But the place felt wrong from the moment we pulled up. Everything too quiet, like it had been holding its breath, waiting. We settled in anyway, unpacked the tequila, started a drinking game, and by midnight, we were all sloppy drunk, laughing too loud to silence the unease crawling under our skin. I passed out on the couch at around 2 a.m. Couldn't have been asleep more than an hour when Emily's ice-cold hand clamped over my mouth, stifling a terrified shriek. Her eyes were wide, pupils blown with a thrill.
Living room. Now.
She whispered. I followed her on unsteady legs. Madison and Hannah were already circled around something in the floor, a rusted metal ring jutting from the wooden boards, like a bone through skin.
Open it.
Madison whispered, excited. I knelt down, gripped the cold iron ring, and pulled. The hinges groaned like an animal dying. That smell hit me so hard I gagged. Damp earth and something sickly sweet, like meat gone bad. My phone's flashlight caught rough stone steps disappearing into darkness.
Guys, we shouldn't. The owners hadn't mentioned a basement.
Hannah whispered, backing away. But Emily was already descending, giggling that high, tight laugh she got when she was scared but wouldn't admit it.
Don't be such a fucking baby, Han.
The basement wasn't built. It was excavated. Just raw boulder walls like one of those Game of Thrones dungeons. The ceiling pressed down, forcing us to stoop as we scurried deeper. In the corner sat a child-sized table with a single chair. Scattered around it were toys no child should own. Dolls with mouths shown shut. A rocking horse with what looked like real teeth embedded in its mane. Behind the table, hundreds of tally marks scratched into the dirt wall. Some looked decades old. Others looked relatively fresh. Madison picked up a half-burned book from the table. Morale was carved into its cover.
Listen to this,
she said, reading from the last page.
Mommy thinks burning me will make me go away. Stupid mommy. Fire just makes me angry. I'll wear someone new every night.
Guys, I think someone did rituals down here.
Emily pointed at a circle of blackened candles in the corner. Madison's eyes lit up.
We should do a seance.
Are you freaking kidding me? My voice cracked.
Come on, Tyler. Don't you want to meet little Muriel?
Emily teased. But that night, after too many beers and shots, there we were, sitting in a circle in the suffocating basement. The candles we'd found cast flickering shadows across the dirt walls.
We call upon the spirit of Muriel.
Madison intoned.
Come forward and speak to us.
Hannah fidgeted beside me.
This is stupid and disrespectful.
Shh.
Emily snapped.
Muriel, if you're here, give us a sign.
Suddenly, the candles flickered all at once. Very funny, I said. Who blew on them? No one answered. The air had gone completely still. Then the trap door slammed shut with a bang so loud it made us all jump. What the fuck? I scrambled up, rushing to the steps. The door wouldn't budge. Guys, it's stuck! A horrible choking noise cut me off. I turned to see Emily convulsing on the floor, her back arched at an impossible angle. Her eyes rolled back as her limbs jerked violently.
Emily!
Madison screamed, reaching for her. Hannah screamed.
Don't touch her!
Too late. The moment Madison's fingers brushed Emily's skin, Emily's head rotated 180 degrees with a wet, tearing sound. Her eyes had changed. Not just black, they were leaking. Dark fluid streamed upward across her forehead, defying gravity.
Not Emily.
The voice from her mouth wasn't human. Multiple tones layered over each other, like a child's voice stuffed.
Moriel. Here.
Emily's body snapped upright with a sound like kindling breaking. Her head remained backward with that terrible grin splitting her face literally ear to ear. The skin tore the corners.
I know all your secrets.
She sang, neck twisting further with each word.
Hannah screws her professor while her boyfriend sleeps. Madison steals dead people's jewelry at funerals.
Hannah gasped. Madison went white. She crawled toward me, moving like a spider.
And Tyler. Good, sweet Tyler. You watch your roommate shower through the crack in the door.
My stomach dropped. Stop it, Emily, I said, shaking. She was inches from my face, her breath sour and cold.
Not Emily,
she shrieked, her voice splitting into multiple tones. Then she lunged at me. Unbelievably strong hands wrapped around my throat as inhuman fingernails dug into my skin. My eyes rolled back in my head while Emily twisted with inhuman speed, throwing Madison across the room when she tried helping. Hannah screamed.
Mommy tried to lock me away.
Emily, Morris whispered, face inches from mine.
Just like you'll be locked away. Forever.
Suddenly, Hannah smashed a porcelain doll against Emily's head. She collapsed, releasing her grip. We dragged Emily up the stairs. This time, the trap door opened easily. Too easily, like it wanted us to leave. We burst into the living room. The morning sun was streaming through the windows. Emily was bleeding from her temple, still unconscious. Again, her eyes snapped open. We scurried away while she groaned and blinked. However, this time, her normal brown eyes, confused, scared, stared at us. She started screaming, raw animal sounds of terror. Then she vomited, a thick black liquid that smelled like rot. We didn't wait, just drove to the hospital, Emily still screaming, her voice going hoarse. The doctors diagnosed her with a psychotic break. They didn't believe our story about the basement, about the voice that wasn't hers, and we were too much of a chicken to revisit the dungeons. I visited her yesterday at the psychiatric hospital. She doesn't talk anymore, just sits by the window, drawing the same thing over and over. A circle of candles, a child's table, and when no one was watching, she looked at me and smiled. Once again, her eyes, just for a second, went completely black. It started with Airbnb, a charming country cottage that would save our marriage, Mark had said. Remote, romantic, just what we needed after months of silent dinners and separate beds, and I was totally for it. The smell hit me first as soon as we arrived, musty and sweet, like rotting flowers. The old caretaker woman who let us in didn't return my smile.
Do not disturb what isn't yours,
she instructed, pressing the key into my palm with ice-cold fingers. Her nails dug into my skin as she emphasized.
Some things in this house like being alone.
I followed her eyes into the bedroom. That's when I saw it. The cradle. Small and ancient, its dark wood polished by decades of touch. It sat in the corner like a spider waiting to strike, so out of place it'd send creepy chills down my spine.
Weird decoration,
Mark muttered, dropping our bags. I nodded, mouth dry. Something about it seemed hungry. That night, I woke to Mark's breathing beside me, heavy and slow. Something else was breathing too, raspy, wet, coming from the corner. Creak. My body went rigid. Creak, creak. The moonlight slicing through the curtains illuminated the cradle, rocking gently, empty, but moving. My rational mind grasped for explanations. Uneven floorboards, air currents, too much wine. Creak. It rocked faster now, the motion too deliberate, too rhythmic. I opened my mouth to scream, but couldn't. I stared, horrified, as it swayed, then abruptly stopped, as if whatever was rocking it had noticed me watching and hated it. At breakfast, Mark told me I'd been mumbling in my sleep all morning.
What was I saying?
Dunno. Something like, it's empty, but it's not. While Mark hiked that afternoon, I walked near the cradle. I dreaded how it pulled me, compelled me to touch. I was running my fingers along the wood when I felt them. Fresh scratches gouged deep into the oak, like something had clawed its way out. I pressed my finger to one. It was sticky, warm. That night, Mark built a fire. We drank wine and talked about trying again. For the unborn we'd lost last year when a high-pitched cry shattered the moment. Unmistakable, impossible, coming from the bedroom. Mark's face drained of color.
You heard that too?
As we crept toward the sound, the crying grew more desperate. Wet, gurgling gasps between wails, like a baby drowning in its own tears. The bedroom door swung open on its own. Inside, the cradle was empty, but the crying continued, filling the room like poisonous gas. Then everything went eerily quiet for a few seconds before laughter started echoing, soft at first, then building until it screamed the morphed words,
"Mommy! Daddy! Play with me!"
Every light in the house went out simultaneously. In the pitch blackness, I felt something brush against my leg. Small, cold fingers, grasping. Mark's scream was primal. We fumbled through the darkness, crashing into furniture, desperate to escape, but the front door wouldn't open, and every window was nearly sealed.
"The back door!"
Mark hissed, pulling me through the kitchen. Behind us, something dragged across the floor. Slow, deliberate, a scraping sound like tiny nails on hardwood.
"Mommy."
The whisper made my breath hitch.
"Please don't leave me alone again. I'm scared. Take me with you."
Mark slammed his body against the back door. Once, twice. On the third try, the wood cracked.
"Again!"
I screamed, joining him. My eyes kept flickering back to the shadows in the dark. The scraping was closer now.
"Hurry! It's near!"
I cried, shivering at the cold sensation that had kissed the whole of my body.
"I'm freezing!"
It whispered directly into my ear. Mark rammed the door again. This time, it splintered open. We burst into the night, the frigid air burning my lungs, and ran blindly through the darkness, not caring about the branches whipping our faces. Behind us, the house seemed to pulse with sickly yellow light. Mark yanked open the car door, fumbling with the keys. The engine sputtered once, twice. I looked back at the house. In the upstairs window, our bedroom, stood a small figure. Even from this distance, I could see its unnatural smile splitting its face nearly in half. It pressed its tiny hands against the glass and mouthed something.
"I'll find you."
The engine roared to life. Mark floored it, tire spitting gravel as we tore down the driveway. Neither of us spoke for miles. What was there to say? A week later, I couldn't stop thinking about the house, about the cradle, about what the voice had said. I raked the internet until I found the details. A small newspaper article from 30 years ago cited the cottage's owner had left her baby in that house, days alone in the cradle. By the time anyone checked, he was dead, starved and cold. They never found the mother, but her diary was retrieved, which told in great length how her illegitimate pregnancy ruined her life. It was the last entry that nearly chilled my blood. He won't be alone. I'll always send him someone to play with until I come find him again. I wept the whole day and showed it to Mark when he returned from work. He said he felt sorry, but we better put everything behind. But can you ever really put behind something like